It's J-O squared.
Where does a squared come in?
J-D.
There's two of us.
They're both squared. Your initials are both J-O. Do you realize this by now?
Oh. Oh!
Oh my god. We now have a cold open.
Oh.
Welcome to the continued podcast adventures of Superhero Speak.
But I think many of the people that love this character and that love superheroes in general have used these stories as inspiration to say, you know what? I'm going to do something good in the world. I'm going to make a difference like my hero when I was a kid.
That is my fondest memory of it, because when you're doing comic books, you want them to affect people, right? You want people to care. You want to strike emotions. And I knew that Clone Saga was striking a lot of emotions.
Can you imagine Pulp Fiction starring Goofy and Mickey Mouse?
I can totally imagine that.
I'm sure somebody's written that one.
Quarter Pounder with cheese in France, Mickey? What? Boy, ale with cheese, Mickey. Yeah. I can totally
see.
I would watch the hell out of that movie.
Yes, I gladly sacrifice that my progeny to you, a mighty Marvel beast.
But Neil Adams is somewhere going, it's my time.
How do you measure success? Hey, everyone. You're listening to Superhero Speak, and I'm your host, Dave.
And John.
And hopefully a better sounding JD.
Yes, yes. No more talking through a beer can.
Beer bottle.
Beer bottle, yes, yes.
You can't talk through a can. Come on, man.
Oh, come on. Don't you remember when you were a kid?
Supposed to be a pro.
When you were a kid and you got two cans and you tied a string to it and to each end and then you walked across, you know, the yard or something?
No, I didn't grow up in our gang.
I was going to say Spanky wasn't my neighbor, but close enough.
You guys are terrible. Wait, John, you're older than me.
Yeah, I know. I mean, you know, I would walk over and borrow from Socrates. You know, it's a matter of perspective.
Oh, hopefully nothing to drink.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Oh, that was bad.
Deep cuts.
Are you talking the absinthe or the lead poisoning?
The hemlock poisoning specifically.
Oh, even better. Okay.
Wow, you guys are on fire tonight.
Greek fire.
Did you have a good week? How about you, John? Did you have a good week? Do anything fun?
Oh, I watched Batman versus Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
How awesome was that?
It was good. It was good. It was, you know, it was up and down a bit. It's kind of hard to put together people's heads getting lopped off, which you don't. It was kind of jarring to see that in a animation, and then go from that to really stupid wisecracks.
You know, I agree with that. Tonally, it shifts a bit weird. We got it to watch, like preview to let our son watch, and after watching it, we decided no,
yeah, we're not
gonna watch this.
Because I liked it. Oh yeah, yeah. No, it was good. I mean, it wasn't Batman Ninja, that's for sure.
Yeah.
It wasn't anywhere near there. I mean, it was much better than that. Not as good as most of Bruce Timm's stuff, but the voice acting was fairly good, and it did catch the tone of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, that's for sure, and Batman. So that was good. First episode of Swamp Thing was good too. I want to watch the second, but it's hard now to watch a series you already know is dead.
Yeah.
Good Omens, just go, just see it. Just see it.
It's on the list. I'm trying to finish the book first and then I'm going to watch it.
Yeah. So that's been my week nothing much. No more tornado warnings. So, that's been good.
Yeah. How about you, JD? You were filming at night.
Yeah, I'm a videographer. Work on the weekends. Did a really cool wedding last night on the Chicago River that when they went into Lake Michigan. It was really cool. I got some awesome footage with my camera, so it was pretty neat. I also got a new side gig.
Uh-oh.
Based on one of our – so this person actually reached out to me And based on our conversation with our good buddy Aubrey Sitterson and how passionate I was talking about wrestling, which you know Dave has mocked me about on social media, turns out someone said, hey, this is an opportunity you might like. So the Fansided is looking for new commentators for their wrestling page. I applied. They liked my background. And I haven't started yet, but I have a new job, writing about wrestling.
Gee, cool. I wonder how you'll make it through that.
A little bit tougher because I don't like WWE wrestling, so it's going to be a lot of Japan and indie stuff. But it'll be cool because everybody else writes about WWE, so I'll get to some different stuff.
I'm sure Japan will be pure fodder for anything you need.
New Japan Pro Wrestling is awesome. G1 Climax tournament is coming up. It's going to be
great. I've heard that they're good. Like, it's the best. You know, much more entertaining.
More sports-based.
I think that gives you also an edge, right? Because
I think so.
You're right. All the other guys are going to be writing about the WWE. You're going to contribute stuff where it's like, oh, here's something different to take a look at. You know,
that was kind of the idea. That's how I pitched it. And I think it's going to be fun. Like, again, it's paid based on clicks, so I may regret being a pro wrestling snob if you believe one exists. But I say it'll be fun. It's actually paid writing work, so I'm excited to do something.
Cool. Yeah, I had an interesting week. Started off with, my birthday was last week. My son-in-law's birthday is actually 2 days before mine. So, you know, we went out to dinner one night and, had fun celebrating that. I actually went to some kind of training thing for my work, so I got a day off for that. And then Friday morning, I get up and, I was told not to go to work because my work blew up. So, you know,
it's kind of. Yeah, and you're not joking about that.
No,
it was in the news.
Yes.
The roof was on fire.
Yeah, yeah. Well, actually, the unit was in the river, but. Wow. Yeah, if you saw the footage, that was taken at ground level when, like, the second explosion happened. You saw a piece of the unit flying away, and it actually landed in the Schuylkill River. And, yeah.
The unit? Is that what they called your desk?
I'm man enough to laugh at the unit flying through the air.
So, yeah. For those who don't know by now, but this was national news, I work at one of the oldest refineries in the country, and it's
no longer the oldest.
The biggest on the East Coast, the 10th largest in the country. Mm. And, it's weird because, you know, obviously we were told don't come into work that day. They got everything under control. It's all out now, but it was creepy going in today because, like, most of the units are shut down. So, like, there's no smoke coming out of the smokestacks. There's no product going through any of the units. And it's just like, wow. Like, it's because the place is usually buzzing because, you know, so much activity. It's kind of eerie. So, and needless to say, I'm a little nervous about continuing working there. So,
well, you survive this. What worse can happen?
Don't say that.
It's already been on fire.
It's true. Oh God, that's the world of GARP message.
It's funny though because they haven't they've had a couple fires here and there, but they're usually pretty small, and they have an on-site fire brigade, and they normally get it out before the Philadelphia Fire Department shows up. But they haven't had anything like this since 1975. So, you know, I mean that's something good, right? They haven't had a major disaster like this in a long time, but still, it's kind of scary.
No disasters would be better.
Well, yes. So
you know, Dave is scared to go back to work. So let's allay his fears. Go to our Patreon.
Well, I was going to say, but on the other side of things, the good side of things, the other thing that I've been busy with this week, and people may have noticed. Some ads on our show last week. So I wanted to make an announcement so people knew that we are now part of the Speaker Prime program. Essentially, that means we are a partner with Spreaker. We use them as our main host, and they put ads into our show. They inject ads in. So, you know, it's just like if you're on YouTube and you're watching and, you know, you get ads injected into the videos you're watching. Same kind of concept. But yeah, so yes, we would still like people to join our Patreon, for there is exclusive content still out there, but, we're hoping that this will help us improve things, for you. You know, we're actually looking to get some probably better equipment, for recording and editing and some other surprises we have in mind. But, I think this will be a good move for us going forward. And, I'm just announcing it as a matter of transparency for everyone. You know, this is why you're hearing ads on the show now.
Cool.
Yeah.
So, gotta pay the bills.
Yeah, gotta pay the bills somehow. Especially if your day job blows up. But I think on that note, it's time to get into a little bit of social media madness. All aboard! So, we had talked about the Phantasm being part of the DC Comics going forward.
That's Batman's Mask of the Phantasm.
Yes.
Not the thing with the tall man and the floaty balls with the pointy objects.
Oh, my God, no.
Yeah, the tall man.
Good
reference, though.
Thank you.
Right, Chris said, no SHIT Batman, Mask of the Phantasm. I had that movie on VHS when I was a kid, and now I have it on Blu-ray.
He actually said no $HIT.
Does that make it more street? Is that how that works?
Sure.
No, it doesn't.
and then gave a quote from the movie, "Your Angel of Death Awaits." So that's one person that's happy about it. Then we had, this was interesting. So, Bruce Wayne said he would be interested if it was anyone but King writing it.
Yeah, but it's not the verified Bruce Wayne, so, you know.
Oh, yes.
Or the real Bruce Wayne, or Bruce Wayne Rocks, or any of the others that are out there.
I need that blue check mark.
Ryan B., yes, I always wondered why they never explored the character more. The best villains are always the ones with an emotional attachment to the main hero. This is a perfect time for Andrea Belmont to surface again with Bruce and Selina's marriage.
I agree.
Ooh, that would be pretty painful to watch, actually, which would be good drama.
And then our buddies over at the Gorilla Brain podcast said, looks like the Mask of Phantasm movie comic just went up in price.
It's from the 90s. That's not true. No comics go up in price. It's a myth.
Not from the 90s.
Yeah, no. I'm sure everybody who bought it bought like 10 copies apiece. Because they were all – in the 90s, everybody was trying to collect.
Just lining a cat box somewhere now.
So yep.
Probably in my basement.
It's just funny though, because like I could be wrong, and maybe JD can correct me on this. I thought everyone liked Tom King's writing.
Oh, it's like anytime someone's popular, you're always going to have people that hate. Tom King's got a very distinctive style, too, so I get why people don't like him. I really liked his Batman. I did not like his work on Heroes in Crisis, but he's got a style. It's not like – it's not Bendis-y, but I mean, you know how you read a Bendis comic, you know you're reading a Bendis comic. Tom King's the same way in that regard. Like when you're reading Tom King, like he's got a lot of idiosyncrasies that make it like him. And I could see people not digging it, to be honest with you.
Okay. And the one story that kind of got the most reactions on Twitter was Jason Momoa wants to play Wolverine. As we said, he was too tall. Well, at least I said he was too tall. Johnny the Machine Hughes said, my only question would be how different his Wolverine would be than his Aquaman. I don't know.
Probably not much.
Yeah. Mr. Max said Hugh Jackman is taller than Momoa. What is he?
I don't know. But, I mean, a lot of people reacted like you did, thinking he's tall, and the tall thing is really sticking out with people on this, which I find interesting. I didn't even think of that until you brought it up last week.
Let's see. Michelle Broken Gothwings said, I think he would be awesome. Dermot Murphy said, he's got the cojones. Yeah. Timothy Jones, who was a guest on our show, said, I'd rather not have a tall surfer dude Wolverine.
No, no, nobody wants that.
The Dorkening said he would be a better Sabretooth.
That's interesting.
Maybe. Maybe.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I want to give a special shout out to the Cavalclad Comics, who took this opportunity to put a cheap plug in for their book. It had nothing to do with anything.
You noticed I skipped over
that. I just like the boss, to be honest with you. Like, don't buy his book, but it's funny.
I apologize for saying this Twitter handle out loud, but I'm the black guy, duh, said, I also think he's too tall.
Okay, so we I think we have a quorum. He's too tall. So obviously the what they need to do is have him act on his knees the whole time.
I love you 3000. Now, if he wanted to play Sabretooth, on the other hand, and Kieran Allen said Hugh Jackman was too tall. So yeah, there's definitely a quorum on the he's too tall line.
Well, you know. But this is all speculation, so it doesn't really matter until we hear something official.
Here's a good one. The Den of Nerds said, I could see him more as Omega Red.
My God.
I don't know that.
That's a John Byrne early 90s.
Okay, wait. Do you have an issue with the character of Omega Red?
No, I don't. I don't know who Omega Red is.
No, I'm saying JD, because JD said, oh, God.
Oh, it's from that early. There weren't a lot of great X-Men things that were added after the blue-gold era began. Like, your good X-Men stuff pretty much ends immediately before X-Men number one hits the scene. After that, it's just all superfluous. Once Chris Claremont goes, it's all downhill.
You know, it's funny. When I was a kid, I kind of liked Omega Red. And as an adult, looking back on the character, it's like he was a leftover from the Cold War era mentality, you know?
Yeah. Right up there with KG Beast.
Yes. Oh, yes.
That one I've heard of.
And then the last but not least, Martin Havel said he's only 2 inches taller than Hugh Jackman, who was too tall.
So is that another vote for too tall?
I think so.
This is where he words that kind of weird.
So there we go. He's too tall, but ladies and gentlemen. I think we're settled on that. He's too tall, and he should play a throwback character from the 90s. Oh, wait. No.
Make him play Drago.
Again,
he did play Drago.
I think, you know, it's also the idea that he was already Aquaman, you know? And I think part of the problem is people will have a hard time getting past that in the movies. So, what are you going to do? All right. So, and to continue our social media madness, just want to say a shout out to the Geek World All-Stars Podcast Network. Say that 5 times fast, people. It's hard. And of course that includes us, So Wizard, Pop Prism Power Podcast, The Gorilla Brain Podcast, Fans Only Troll, and Cult 45. See, I wrote it down this time, guys, so I know I didn't forget anyone. And there was no mention on Twitter or Facebook about us forgetting anyone last week, so we must have been good.
We are just so on tonight. I can feel the volume flowing through the audio here. Anybody who's listening, just put us on 2-speed. That should speed us up to the point where you can actually listen to us normally.
I got stuff. I got takes coming.
Okay. All right. So
who are you?
Just a reminder. Reminder to everyone out there, don't forget to listen to us on our new favorite pod listener, and that is Podcoin. You can listen to, you earn Podcoins by listening to podcasts. All your favorite podcasts are on there. And you can turn in your Podcoins for gift certificates to things like Starbucks and Dunkin' Donuts and Amazon. Or you can turn them into charity where you, you know, can give back to the less fortunate than yourself. And yes, and if you sign up right now using our code HEROSPEAK, you'll get 300 Podcoins on us. So there you go. And on that little ad, we will be taking a little break here, and we will be right back after a word from our sponsors.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
All right, guys, we're back. And you know what? I think it's time for the news. All right, so I switched it up this week, guys, because we normally start with Marvel. I started with DC this week.
Well, that should get over quick.
And the first one I'm going to talk about, there was a lot of buzz on social media about this. DC is getting rid of the Vertigo imprint. essentially,
that sucks.
Yeah. Yeah, essentially they're going to replace it with DC Black label. And yeah, it's kind of the end of an era, right? Vertigo launched a lot of books that people love.
Neil Gaiman.
Vertigo is the best thing to happen to comics in the last, definitely in the 20th century.
Oh, yeah.
Wait. Did you mean Neil Gaiman?
Gaiman, yes.
Neil Diamond.
I didn't say Neil Diamond. I'm old, but not... Okay, I am that old. But still, I corrected myself. And yes, JD is right. Sandman, Preacher, I mean, Lucifer, a lot of comics that broke ground and were just not... I mean, it gave people leeway to be really creative instead of having to go by this standard cookie cutter formula.
Scalped, Transmetropolitan, We Three.
Oh, Transmetropolitan! Like,
such, and, you know, it,
Hellblazer.
Part of me wonders
too,
if this isn't a mercy. What's that?
Hellblazer was Vertigo as well, right?
Hellblazer was Vertigo. Yes.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Like
Oh,
Vertigo starts as Swamp Thing. Like Swamp Thing and Hellblazer pretty much. The Karen Berger section of the DC Universe birthed Vertigo. You know, it was the stuff post-crisis that was too artsy weird for the mainstream DC. Right. And it grew from there. It became its own thing. And, like, think about how many of the great voices in comics, art and writing-wise, that really made their splash in Vertigo. And it's been kind of a long time coming, I think. Like, it hasn't been the same since Karen Berger left. You know, they tried to do it again with Shelley Bond and with Jamie Rich, and it just never quite picked up the way it was.
Yeah.
You know?
No.
And for those of you that listening, Hellblazer is where John Constantine came from. So you probably know that name more, which goes to show how powerful some of these comics have become.
John, I kind of think if they're listening to this podcast, they know who John Constantine is.
They know who John Constantine, but they might not know Hellblazer.
They know
I mean, it depends.
They probably don't know Hellblazer. That's probably true. Like maybe.
Yeah, we're trying to you know bring people into the fold, not make them feel stupid for not knowing stuff that you know we had time to look up.
Wait, you know that's not how you normally treat me. What's going on here?
On a personal level, like I had a book that was in development at Vertigo. Like we went back and forth with the editor for the better part of a year trying to develop a book there. And it kind of died when some editorial shifts were happening and the publisher decided that it wasn't what they wanted to go with. This is the case of comics. And this isn't a cry for me thing or anything like that. It's just, you know, it's the story of comics. Like when I was working trying to get a book out at Vertigo, like it made me super, super excited every day because this is a place where, like I said, the best voices in comics came from. And it was I was bummed that I didn't get a job, but I was more sad that I wouldn't see my work with that Vertigo label on it. And so like I kind of did my Vertigo mourning already personally, But like, it's sad for me to see this because I do think that it's a chapter. I don't think that DC Black Label will have that same prestige that Vertigo had.
No, there have to be some convergence of like some really amazing authors to get that kind of synergy again. It's just, you know, that's one of those things that just happened that nobody expects, nobody could have engineered. And it's, you know, you look back and it's like, wow, how lucky were we that those people got together and did that?
It's not only that, like DC Black Label, for lack of a better term, or no pun intended, already has a black eye because it's like they gave us a Batman story that really wasn't too adult. What made it adult was Batwang. You know, and it was like,
this is true.
Like, really, this is how you want to start out that imprint, and now you're going to say, okay, and now we're getting rid of Vertigo, and this is taking over.
I guess what bugs me the most about that is because, like, if you're going to be the label that does the more artist-centric versions of stories, and then to go back and change it, it's kind of like, well, what are you? You know, are you the label that takes the big risks and like does things that the artist wants to do, or are you just more the more homogenized corporate stuff?
Not if you're launching with a Batman book, no.
But that's what I'm saying, though. That's why it should have been done. Like, this is why the Black Label won't work for Vertigo. Like, even though Vertigo starts with Swamp Thing and Hellblazer, like, it's not. There was a lot of crazy stuff in Swamp Thing. Like, stuff that would not have flown under DC proper,
right? Yeah.
Like, that's a. I don't know if people who are under, you know, 35 or maybe even 40 realize just how dark Swamp Thing and the themes that were explored by the Alan Moore Swamp Thing book really were.
Well, it's stuff that wouldn't even fly today.
No, not at all.
No.
That's even less today, I think.
I agree with that. And that's why I think that's the sad part is we're just going to get – I think with Black Label, we're just going to get more bat penis type stuff, like more like edgier superhero content as opposed to scalped.
Yeah. Well, speaking of bat penis, I don't know if this is good news or not, but Robert Pattinson is officially out.
Dave, did you actually read this article?
What?
He's not out. Well, the article says he's not out. He's dropping out of a movie called a sequel to a movie called The Souvenir.
Okay, but
yes, he's dropping the other movie because of the scheduling conflict with Batman.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I read the article three times. After Tenant wraps, Pattinson will hop straight into production on Matt Reeves' The Batman, which reportedly entered pre-production later this summer.
Oh, shoot. Oh, right. I apologize. See, I read the headline wrong. darn it. It was wishful thinking on my part.
Well, that dude ain't dropping. That dude will drop out of 100 things before he drops out of that sweet Batman paycheck.
Sweet Batman paycheck?
That's sweet bat money.
All right. Well, everyone ignore that news story. Okay.
Well, no.
Just reinforces that he is the Batman.
I'm sure there are a lot of Robert Pattinson fangirls out there that are not going to forget that.
Yes. All right. Well, also in the DC movie news, this was a couple weeks old, but we haven't talked about on the show, is that Black Adam officially did get a director. And one of you has to say his name because I'm going to butcher it to hell.
I think I'm butchering it too, but I believe it's Wame Kalet Sarah.
Okay. And
sure.
He was director. His credits include Nonstop, The Shallows, The Commuter, and the upcoming Jungle Cruise movie. So, which I believe is the Disney movie that's based on The Ride. Which stars The Rock. If I'm not mistaken. So there you go. I haven't seen those other movies. I'll have to watch the Jungle Cruise movie.
I wonder if this is a Dwayne The Rock Johnson call because they did work together on this Jungle Cruise movie. And I think he's not only is he starring as Black Adam, but he is the producer. I believe he's actually the EDP.
Oh, most likely. Yeah, he probably liked his style. They probably worked well together. It's like, hey, why don't you come direct Black Adam, because those people at Warner Brothers don't know what they're doing anyway.
Hmm.
Oh, was that out loud? I'm sorry.
That's okay. Everybody's saying it.
Ain't no shock.
Yeah.
And then this one was like, I don't know, but well, I brought bring it up anyway. We might still be getting an Ezra Miller Flash movie.
Is it going to be? Is it going to be another universe? Ezra Miller this one? Did they?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, they were going to do Ezra Miller. Okay,
but they're talking about what 2022? Oh, 2021. And it's like, is anyone going to care about Ezra Miller as the Flash at that point?
No one cares about him right now as the Flash, so you can only go one way.
But you know what I'm saying? Like,
you can't go and do a whole movie on his origin or whatever, they did it backwards. It's like JD said, you know, they should have had the movie first before they did Justice League. Now nobody cared in Justice League, and after Justice League, not really interested in seeing him in a movie because his portrayal of him, or the writing's portrayal of him, is just not really good.
Right. Yeah. It is 2022 or 2023. And that is assuming that they don't fast track Fantastic Beasts 4. They're saying that's part of the reason it'll take that long is Fantastic Beasts 3 apparently is going to revolve around his character. So.
And that's before they even, because him and Morrison are still working on the script too. So I mean, right. If that script is turned down, then it goes back into turnaround. This movie ain't ever happening, man.
I don't think it is either. But it sounds like there are people who are trying to keep it alive. I think he's one of them. But I don't know. Like, I don't even know if enough people care to keep it going. You know,
we're gonna see. I'll bet that they're going to reboot the DC universe completely. I mean, they keep saying that they're going to do different movies and none of them are going to have anything to do with each other, but that's just even worse.
I think
that's what they're going to do.
I think when we get the Batman movie, you're going to have a new Batman. I think we're going to get a new Joker in that movie too, because they've been talking about that. And that's going to be where it's like, if it does well, forget all the other movies and characters, you know, it'll be a reboot at that point.
But then they'll have to go back and reintroduce the other characters, and how are they going to work Wonder Woman into that? Because what are they going to say? Oh, there was a DC Rebirth, and she made it through somehow. None of it makes sense.
Just have Dr. Manhattan show up, wave his hand,
yeah,
or his big blue dong.
That's only for DC Black Label.
DC Black Label.
Did we get Blue Dong in the Snyder movie? I don't remember.
Yes.
We did? I couldn't recall.
Hey, probably because you blocked it out.
as I do with most of Zack Snyder's work.
Ah, poor Zack Snyder. Oh, wait. All right. So I think that wraps up our DC news, unless you guys have anything else you want to add.
But, rest in peace, Vertigo.
Yeah.
All right. Well, now let's go across the aisle to Marvel. And let's start with everyone's favorite news article from the week. They were counting down on the social media for Marvel. We all thought, what's going on? Is this going to be a new Spider-Man movie? Is this going to be some kind of novelization of the Spider-Man 4 Sam Raimi movie? And it's like, no, J.J. Abrams' son is now going to be writing Spider-Man.
What a giant collective fart this turned out to be.
Okay, so let me understand this. Like, this is a bad thing, right?
Yes, I think it's a bad thing, but go ahead.
He's only 20 years old, right? He's like...
Yeah, he's like 20. It's, you know, nepotism is a good thing.
Yeah, this is exactly what this is. He's a 20-year-old kid that told his daddy, "Daddy, I have this great idea for Spider-Man." And his helicopter father flew down to C.B. Sobolski and said, "Ma, I'm super powerful and I've done a lot of cool things. So we're going to let my little boy get to write the most powerful character or the most popular character in all of fiction.
We're going to get another Spider-Man with six arms and giving birth to himself again, aren't we?
I mean, it's going to be fine. It could be the worst story ever, and Marvel's going to bend over backwards because JJ's son wrote it. Like, this is – I mean, like, I don't mean to sound sour grapey on this, but I'm going to for just a second, is that this kid, he could be a great writer. You know, I have no problem with him being 20 years old. There have been a lot of young writers that were really good. Neil Gaiman was in his early 20s when he started his career. If this kid's a genius, fine, fantastic. What bugs me is that he gets to jump ahead of the line because he's J.J.'s kid. Now, if someone's going to sit there and say, but J.D., J.J. Abrams' name is going to sell a lot of books. And I will say, is it really? It's going to sell books. The first issue will sell books to stores, which is all Marvel really cares about, is selling books to stores, not to customers.
Hmm.
But who cares?
Right.
And, like, and when they get it's never work.
Right. And when they get a load of his writing, if it's not that great, if he isn't a prodigy right out of the gate, it's going to hurt the print, right?
Here's what's going to happen is that you're going to have it's going to not be very good because the kid doesn't know what he's doing. And the editor is going to, whoever the main editor of the book is going to wind up doing major rewrites. And they're going to act like the kid's a second coming. And in 3 years, we'll never hear from him again until he gets to start his film career.
Here's a question. And totally serious. Like, if his father believes in him that much and he is one of the most powerful directors in Hollywood right now, why doesn't he have his son write a movie, a short film, and he does it? Like,
maybe the kid does want to be a comic writer, in which case, cool. But here's my thing, is do what everybody else did. Start writing indie books.
Right.
The fact that his first book ever is going to be a Spider-Man miniseries, I'm sorry, I'll get blue here, but fuck you. Like, we've had so many, and I'm not taking me out of the equation, because I'm not a comic writer anymore. I pulled myself from that world. Like, but I have so many friends that have busted their ass putting together these Kickstarter campaigns and have grinded their way out on the indie comic circuit that can't sniff a shot at Marvel because they're not friends with the right people or because they're not the next cool it creator right now. We've had guys on here that would do great job writing these books, but they don't get a chance because of who their daddy is. And again, this is just – it infuriates me. Like, – Joe Hill was one of my favorite writers. He's got the Nosferatu TV show that's out right now, mm-hmm. based on a fantastic book. Joe Hill's real name is Joe King. He's Stephen King's son. And when he started his career, he went by – he had put a nom de plume. He had a pen name going, so he would do it on his own. And it took him a while to get his career going. But he wanted to be his own guy.
Right.
And I respect that. That's he's an immensely talented writer. He's as good, if not better, than the old man. But Henry Abrams gets to have this big picture of him on Marvel, and Marvel gets to act like this kid is the second coming because his dad is really good at rebooting movies.
Well, Bruce, it was what's his name from Independence Day?
Jaden Smith? We talking about that old thing?
Yeah, Jaden Smith.
There you go.
Smith,
there's
yeah.
a prime example
yeah,
of heard. Given – like, that kid's acting career is pretty much done. Like, he got – like, I just – the helicopter parenting in Hollywood thing, I don't like. Like, if you have – if you want to work, work, man. Like, do the work. But just jumping ahead of everybody. And the fact that Marvel thinks this is going to make a lot of money for them or bring like, eyes to the product is ridiculous.
Right.
No, and all they've done is alienate a bunch of creators. Like, there's some suck-ups and sycophants that are going to say, oh, great job. We love this. But, I mean, that's basically what it is. Like, you can't tell me that this kid – and I only say earns because you only earn what your name value is worth. You can't tell me this kid, Henry Abrams, has the name value that any indie creator does. There is nobody right now saying, boy, I cannot wait to read the first thing Henry Abrams has ever written.
Hmm.
No, I totally agree. I mean, if I didn't know people that worked at Marvel, I would and have told me stories, I would probably be like, oh, yeah, okay. Maybe we should give this kid a shot. But, yeah, no, this is definitely jumping the line, and there are people.
This is Veruca Salt from Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Oh, totally. Oh. Totally. Yeah. I mean, it's scary. Not scary, but it's frustrating. It's like, Yeah, let him write an indie comic and see how it does. I mean, and that's the thing, too. His dad can lend his name to him doing an indie comic and sell it.
For real. Oh, for real. If you put J.J. Abrams in his – if you took this exact same creative team and put a Kickstarter out there, or put it even at IDW or something like that, one of the smaller big book companies, I'd have no problem with this. I'd roll my eyes at it and be like, whatever, and have him be suspect because I'm a dick. But I mean, like, I don't – the fact that it's Spider-Man, like, it's Spider-Man. Like, it's the jewel character. Like, I know you don't like Dan Slott, but the man had to work for 20 years before he got his own Spider-Man book. You know, and this dude's like, oh, here you go, kid. And slap on the back.
And here's my question. How much of it is he actually going to write?
Oh, I have no idea. Like I said, I don't even think JJ is going to write the majority of it. I think the kid is going to actually – my prediction, I could be wrong on this. The kid will do the key punching, and the editor is going to have to make it comprehensible.
Right.
Basically the literary equivalent of auto-tuning.
Kind of. That's actually a pretty good comparison. That's well said.
That is awesome, John. I love that.
That's what it feels like. It's like, yeah, you'll sing and we'll turn the magic dial in the background and make it good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not a fan of this. And if this book comes out and it's awesome, and it turns out this kid is like the next O'Shea Jackson Jr., all right, cool. I'll eat crow and say I was wrong. He clearly is the second coming of Jerry Conway. But until that happens, color me skeptical.
All right, skeptical.
Well, that's the nice term for it.
Yes, that is a nice term for it.
All right. So moving along, did you guys watch the final season of Jessica Jones?
I completely forgot about it. With everything else I've been keeping up with, I just, you know, it slipped my mind. And I guess the other part of that is that, you know, it's like with no future, it's kind of hard for me to start something I know is going to die in the vine.
I mean, you know, I think it's so bad that even Kristen Ritter is like, yeah, she has no interest in reprising the role anymore. She's done with the character. So it's tough. It is. It's one of those things. Like, who said it? JD, right? You said you said it, John. It's hard to watch Swamp Thing knowing that it's already canceled. You know, it's hard to go and watch the final season of Jessica Jones when you know there isn't going to be any more.
Right, because there's plenty of problems that plenty of things that we get that never have closure. And like, now we know we're never getting closure on Swamp Thing, especially since they cut the budget mid filming, I guess.
Right.
And they had to go from 13 episodes to 10, which meant that by all accounts, they had to scramble to try and figure out how to end the damn thing. And then, you know, with Jessica Jones, I mean, I know all the machinations that went into why they're taking it off of Netflix. You know, Netflix doesn't want to spend the money anymore to support somebody else's thing. They're moving at least the IP over to Disney Plus and all. But for us, the audience, I mean, like Daredevil and Jessica Jones and Punisher were really, really good products. They were really good shows, and we wanted to see more. It would have made a lot of money if they had kept them around.
So, I mean, we kind of said that it'll probably never happen. But if Marvel decided, like, you know what, let's bring these characters back and let's try to bring back the actors who played them on these shows, does it change your want for that, or if, you know, Kristen Ritter isn't going to come back as Jessica?
I don't know. I think Kristen Ritter is as good a pick for Jessica Jones as Tony Stark, you know. Wow, I am blanking today.
Robert Downey?
Yeah, Robert Downey Jr. was. I don't know that they get another person, especially so close. Although, wasn't there – I thought there was some kind of thing where they weren't allowed to
– 2 years from when it's canceled.
2 years. Yeah, so they can't even use the characters for 2 years. So maybe after 2 years, but they'd have to find somebody really, really good because Kristen Ritter was just spot on.
I guess here's the thing is, like, I think that we as comic fans have this hard attachment in letting a story be finished. And, like, we want to see them come back for more and come back again and again. But I do believe in the law of diminishing returns, especially when it comes to these characters. And I think that it's okay to let the Jessica Jones television story be finished. Like, money writes all things. Like, if they offer her enough money and the script is kick-ass, I'm sure she'd think about coming back. But does she need to? Like, are three good seasons, and I haven't seen the second season. I think I didn't know it was out. I think the third season, excuse me. I think Netflix just kind of let it die because they're done with the Marvel thing. But is that better to just let it exist on its own and leave it as opposed to lamenting and trying to shoehorn them back into some continuity that we don't know how it exists or not yet? Like, I'm okay with it. She's okay with it. I think we should be okay with it too, and just letting the series exist for what it was.
Yeah. All right, I'll give you that.
Yeah, sure. Well, they at least had time to end. They at least knew when they were finishing this up that they were going to end it here. So, I mean, I guess when we watch it, it'll at least end well. Not on a, hey, here's a cliffhanger. Oh, we're canceled.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, not like they did with
Luke Cage.
Luke Cage was a bad one, but Lucifer was like one of those that got ended, and but then Netflix saved it. But Netflix can't save it from Netflix. So,
all right,
maybe Hulu could pick her up,
and then the
which is probably what will happen actually.
It might. We'll see.
Well, if they did bring her.
No, Lucifer. If they did bring it, Lucifer's a DC property.
Yes, yeah, I know. But what I'm saying is that if Marvel did bring Jessica Jones back, her character is intrinsically not, you know, Disney Plus material.
Right. Yeah, it'd have to be for sure.
It'd have to be Hulu.
All right, and then in our big final story, in an effort to say, screw you to Avatar. Disney has decided to re-release Endgame with new footage. And when I first read the story last week, like, oh, okay, that's cool. It's down the road. They'll maybe do it. Maybe near the end of the summer. No. Reportedly June 28th, they're going to re-release it in all the theaters with new footage added. In an effort to beat the Avatar record. And they're only 35 million away from the Avatar record, by the way.
Good. A million. I'd be surprised if they couldn't make that just with it, even without the re-release.
It's been real low the last couple weekends.
Yeah, 35 at this point would be hard-pressed to catch. But, I mean, I think they will with this re-release, depending on what they put in there. I mean, let's be real. I'm going to see it again.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'd see it with that, but when's Far From Home coming out?
2 weeks, I think.
Yeah.
2 weeks. Okay. I was going to say, like, that's going to cannibalize it, but if it's 2 weeks, then.
I mean, it's weird still. There hasn't even been, like, an official announcement or commercial or anything, but they're saying it's going to happen. So.
That must be some agreement they have with the film, with the. Movie theater industry.
Well, this happens though with these big movies. Like they re-released Avatar a couple times. They re-released Titanic. Like this is how these movies build these ridiculous box offices.
I still have no idea how Avatar made as much money as it did.
Mark Ellis likes it.
Yes.
Oh, well, that explains everything.
That's all I got. I mean, I don't know. I've never met, I love that dude, but I've never met a single person besides him who likes that movie.
Yes, yes. And he let us know quite vehemently.
Took us to task.
Who was that?
Took us to task.
Oh, yes. Yes, he did. It's just a movie. Anyway, So that leads us into our next topic of conversation. Our main event of the evening, as it might be. You had shared this with us, JD. Toy Story 4 has become the summer's latest franchise to open way below expectations. The trade stories have a ton of yes, but, and everything's fine. Anything to avoid even entertaining the possibility the endless brand extensions are starting to bore people. So, they keep saying this, that a lot of these movies that are expected to be blockbusters are not doing that great this year. In fact, they're saying we're currently, even with Endgame, we're 7% below box office returns from previous years at this point. So since you brought it up, JD, what do you attribute to people not going to see these movies everyone's expecting them to see?
I think they're right. I mean, from what everyone says, I haven't seen Toy Story 4 yet, but I mean, I think that if Toy Story is underperforming, everything is underperforming. I think that we finally hit that peak where people are like, okay, what else is there? And I do think that people are tired of sequels and endless franchises and endless reboots. And I think that a lot of imagination has disappeared. We talked about it on the show that a lot of imagination and ingenuity has disappeared from cinema because it costs so much money. And Hollywood executives don't have their jobs to create. They have their jobs to suck the life out of. And I think that's the point we've reached right now. I mean, like, if Toy Story ain't making money, what is? And I don't think the Child's Play reboot did very well either.
Well, like, that was Child's Play.
Okay, horror movies are making money right now. These Blumhouse films are killing at the box office in relation to what they're made for. Hmm. And this one's underperforming.
So,
like, I think we're done.
I think you're right to a point, but I think there's more to it because, you know, I also point to, again, this was the 22nd Marvel film, 23rd Marvel film, fourth Avengers movie, and it's made over $2 billion worldwide. And it's not, like, a lot of people expected that to burn out at this point. Like, another Marvel movie. But I also...
That wasn't going to, because they were telling one contiguous story. It wasn't constant reboots.
I think he's right. I think John's right. I think that Marvel is the exception.
Right.
The exception that proves the rule. Excuse me.
No, what I'm saying is I think part of the problem is because of these insane blockbusters that have been happening. There's a tendency in the industry now, and I could be wrong, but it seems like there's a tendency to overestimate their hands at this point. You know, and there's this theory, and we've talked about this on the show plenty of times, that there's this idea that, oh, if it doesn't make back its money in the first weekend, it's a failure. And it's like, but go back to when I was a kid and movies were out for the entire summer, and it might take the entire summer for them to, you know, turn a good profit, but they let movies breathe and they don't do that anymore. It's like, get in and get out. And if you
they can't afford to do it anymore though, because back when we were younger, there was a blockbuster. Like in 1976, Jaws came out. 1977, Star Wars came out. Like they're trying to re-release Jaws and Star Wars every weekend. And it costs money to not only make these movies, but to show these movies. Like, if everything is like we said before, if everything is a blockbuster, nothing's a blockbuster.
Right. And that's what I'm saying. But they want everything to be a blockbuster. They're not happy with making a decent drama movie and have it make back what what it made in 2 weeks. You know, like, oh my God. It's got to be this super over the top movie or it's not worth making. And it's like, really? I don't know. It just seems like there's a disconnect between what Hollywood thinks people want and what people actually want.
Which is why we're getting a Dora the Explorer reboot.
Why we're getting
live action. Yeah.
But there's always that. Like, Hollywood never knows what the audience wants. Like, it's elevated gambling. They're betting on they know it. And then anyone who says, I know what the audience wants is full of crap because audiences don't know what they want. All they know is what they don't want. right? Like in 99, nobody thought The Matrix was going to revolutionize film. And then for the next 10 years, everything was wire foo and bullet time. Until it wasn't. Well, until people got tired of it.
But I mean, it's things too, like, okay, so Disney is on the top right now because they have all of these super successful Marvel movies, right?
And Star Wars.
And Star Wars. But at the same time, they also took a gamble and started making all of these live-action remakes of their old animated movies. And
not old, and the movies aren't even that old.
Right, but, I mean, you know what I'm getting at. Like, yeah. Who are they making these movies for in this, in that sense? Like, I get, like, oh, well, kids who grew up, who watched Aladdin in the 90s are now parents, and they're going to want to take their kids to see this Aladdin. But those parents are taking their kids to see the Marvel movies. Mm-hmm. So why do they think they're going to go run out and see? Like, I don't get that disconnect there. And then,
well,
God.
Those movies were only made for cash grabs. When you try to have Emma Watson sing in a movie, you're only going for the cash grab.
All movies like this are only made for cash grab. Like, that's the studio system that we're in right now. It's like the 50s all over again. We're about to experience like another studio collapse because like it's not working. Like, you can't have this many movies that are underperforming. You're spending too much.
Right.
And they're making things that people aren't connecting with because like cinema isn't, I don't want to say challenging audiences, but it's certainly not capturing audiences' imagination right now. What made movies like Jaws and Star Wars special was that they were a rejection to what was going on, of the auteurism of the 70s, where it was all directors with their grandiose ideas, you know, now, and that became blockbusters. And, you know, it's been that way for a long time. And now it's kind of like, well, what else you got? Like, we had the star, like, in the 90s, it was all the star-driven vehicle. It was all, what Will Smith movie is out? What Tom Cruise movie is out? And that's kind of passé, too.
Oh, yeah.
Like, people are tired of star vehicles.
Well, that's like...
But you look at... No, go ahead.
But that, exactly. And I think Men in Black International is a perfect example. Oh, well, Chris Hemsworth and Tessa Thompson.
Tessa Thompson.
You know, oh, the big stars from Thor Ragnarok. We'll throw them in Men in Black, and it's going to make a killing. And it was like...
Wet fart.
Yeah.
Mm. Like, it just, that's what I'm saying, is people, Men in Black is about Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones. And we have, like I said, we talked just a minute ago about Jessica Jones, of letting a story be told. We're not very good at letting, like, Hollywood especially, when I say we, Hollywood isn't good at just letting a story be told. I know this is a bad example, but I'm going to use it real quick. The first John Wick movie wasn't supposed to be anything, and it captured people's imaginations, kind of low budget, reinvigorated Keanu Reeves. They've made two more. They're going to make a third. Now that's become a franchise, so it's kind of a bad example. But it did. It caught people's imagination. It got people excited about action movies again. You know, so of course the executives are going to milk that for all it's worth and kill it. But, I mean, like, where is that? Like, what is the next cool movie happening? What is the next original story that you're going to see? Like, even something like Stranger Things, which is a lot of, like, 80s, like, nostalgia, is still an original story. Well, like, it's still something new.
Another great example with Keanu Reeves was The Matrix. Like,
perfect.
That was a completely new and different idea, you know, and it was, you know, one of the greatest movies. I mean, I went and saw that in the theater probably three times.
Me too.
It may not have been the greatest, but it was groundbreaking. Nobody had seen Bullet Time before then. And I don't think anybody had gone through, like, you know, 6 months or a year of training for martial arts. And then the
it wasn't even just the martial arts and the special effects. It was the concepts behind it and the story and the existentialism of what's real and what, you know, what are we being told is reality. And
it was the perfect movie for that Y2K era. It was a little bit of everything. You had a little kung fu, you had a little existentialism, that burgeoning cyberpunk movement, which hadn't really gone mainstream yet, with a recognizable star. And Keanu might not have been huge at the time, but he was recognizable. Speed made him a star. Mm. So, I mean, like, it hit everything just perfectly at the right time. And it wasn't a huge budgeted movie. So it was a gigantic success that revolutionized cinema in the late 20th century, early 21st right. century.
But, and also what I'm hitting on is John Wick, and The Matrix and Jaws. And at the time, it's an original idea that hits. It's not taking an existing property and trying to make the fifth one of them or reboot it or take an idea of an old 80s TV show and make it into a movie now or taking a beloved kids show from the 60s and 70s and turning it into a horror movie. Like,
and I still maintain that the reason this all happened is because Iron Man worked, right? And Iron Man, to the vast majority of the world, was a fairly original property. Because before Robert Downey Jr. came along, nobody knew who Tony Stark was.
Yeah.
Tony Stark was not part of the cultural vernacular. It is now, and it's almost been like, well, we're on the back end of this giant scythe where – man, I'm not tired of Marvel movies. But like I said, they're the exception to the rule. I haven't gone out and seen anything but John Wick 3, and I love going to the movies in the summertime. Because nothing is grabbing me as, man, I gotta go see that.
Yeah.
I have to go see that.
I think you're right. And it's, you know, nobody wants these reboots. I really don't think they do anymore at this point. You know, I can't imagine. Like you said, just let the story be told that was already told and move on. Like, find something original.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Mm. It's sad.
Like, maybe so, Jack Hallow, right?
Am I saying that right? No, we're going to get a Little Rascals universe.
Oh, God. No.
I mean, it's like JD said, we might be on the verge of another crash. It's going to take a crash to basically clear the decks so that the real creators can come back out again.
It's going to take one filmmaker that someone's going to take a chance on that makes a modestly budgeted film that really just clicks. And like I joked about horror before, but there's a lot of original stuff going on in horror right now that is playing to cinemas and is getting audience imagination, and places like Blumhouse that can knock these movies out for super cheap but are really creative that are doing really well. Jordan Peele has reinvented himself as a horror filmmaker.
Oh, yeah. Now, there is some really original ideas that are good.
Yeah. And that's where the cool stuff is going on right now. Now, when is someone going to take that risk in drama or in sci-fi?
I don't know. I mean, that's it's funny. Going a little bit back, because John was – when we were talking on Slack about J.J. Abrams' son writing Spider-Man – John was complaining about his Star Trek stuff.
I don't think J.J. Abrams is all that great.
Okay.
I remember being so excited when they had that first teaser trailer for the new Star Trek reboot. And I was like so excited. And, yeah, we're going to see all these great graphics and everything. And then it's, you know, the storyline was so bad.
No. But lens flares aside.
Yeah, those two.
No, honestly, I think the problem with his Star Trek movies, and a lot of people don't talk about this, is that I'm sure the studio had something to do with this in the idea of nobody wants to sit through a cerebral science fiction movie anymore. It's got to have action and explosions and you know, chases and everything. And that's why we got the high octane Star Trek movies from JJ that we got. And it's just like
100%.
You know, it's like, but this isn't the Star Trek everyone grew up with. This isn't the Star Trek that Gene Roddenberry created. This is.
And it's not the Star Trek that's going to last, because people, even people that like those movies, it's not going to matter to them in 20 years. The thing about Star Trek was it caught your imagination because it was cerebral, because it challenged people on their ideas. And that's why it lasted 50 years or more.
Right.
So these new movies are just going to go down in history as a blip.
And that's the whole problem. It's like they could have rebooted it and done it right, but they decided, oh, no, let's just do what's popular and slap the Star Trek label on it and, you know, do a cash grab. And it's just like,
but that's the thing though, is they would have to play devil's advocate, if they would have done something a little bit more in the line of what Gene Roddenberry did, they probably wouldn't have made as much money as it made. and then people would have written that off as a failure. Rather than – this is the thing. This is the problem. Is good storytelling is created in the confines of what – is reflective of the confines it is created. Like all art is a reflection of when it was created. Like Star Trek is a perfect story to come out of that mid-60s.
Right.
Mm.
You know, you can't – and you can't expect a mid-60s audience – to think the same as a mid-aughts audience. It's different. Culture is different. So you either do one of two things. You make the same thing and it doesn't appeal to today's audience the way it did 30 years prior, or you change it to fit the current audience. And either way, you're cutting someone out and you're not doing a good job creating it. Like, I'm to the point now where this is – I'm like, why can't a story just be the story and it exist in where it was? And that's just it, you know? Yeah.
That's a good question. I don't know if we can answer that.
Nope.
Maybe our audience can. What do you guys think? Let us know. Are you tired of the reboots? Do you think we need just original stories and let them be what they are? Do we need younger, fresher faces in the writers' rooms in Hollywood? You know, have them not do live action versions of The Lion King.
Dave, I don't think it's the voices. I think the people who are telling these stories would love to be telling their own stories. I think this is what they're getting paid for.
Yeah.
Like at some point, life becomes about paying your mortgage. And it's the same thing for these super Hollywood creatives too. Like I'm sure they would much rather be telling their own story. But, you know, daddy got to buy a boat.
Well, daddy doesn't need a boat.
Well, I know I'm being a dick, but I mean, like, that's kind of the point I'm trying to make is, like, I think that they're not getting the opportunity because, like, you know, peace sells, but who's buying, to quote Megadeth?
No one. All right.
For
real, though, I think you should do a poll on this one because I'd really like to see what the audiences think about this. Like, let's see. I would really like to see some aggregate numbers on whether people are tired of it or what. Like, especially from our listeners, because they're super pop culture in tune and they do watch these kind of movies. Let's see what the people in the middle of it think.
Okay. All right. Well, look for that poll probably the day after this podcast is released. I'll put that up. So on that note, that's the news. Let's move on at our main discussion, and let's move on now to a quick interview. Another one that we got from Wizard World Philly. John, you did this one. It was with Michael D'Angelo. Do you have anything to say before we...
Yeah, I think I mentioned this last week. But so this is Michael D'Angelo. And we've interviewed a whole bunch of people at some of these conventions. And it's gotten to the point now where we're looking for outliers, like things that would be really interesting to bring to you. And the reason why we interviewed Michael is because I'm walking past his tables and it's like, okay, he's got books. Okay, well, you know, he's an author. He's got a lot of authors. Then, you know, next table over. Oh, he's got another table. What's on this one? Oh, that's a card game. All right. Well, that's interesting. I mean, he's got books and a card game. Great. Next table over. Oh, I'm still in front of Tellus. What the hell? And it's all this art. All right, this guy's, you know, pushing stuff. I get to the next table, and it's still Tellist, and he's doing a demo of a pre-release or a beta version of a video game based on the books. So at that point, I'm like, okay, fine. So, you know, we got this interview with him. Apparently, this guy's going to be a one-man media storm. The video game is supposed to come out, I guess, the end of this year. He's got quite a few books for this Tellus thing. He also some of these books are collections of a bunch of main characters. He calls them the Avengers of Tellus, and you know, the rest he's got backstories for everything, and he's just building this huge universe just by himself. So that's enough of a lead in. Here's the interview. You can hear him tell it himself.
All right. Take two, John O'Grady, superheroespeak.com at the Wizard World Philadelphia 2019. And this is a second go around because what is Superhero Speak without technical difficulties? I am here because I was walking through the convention, and I caught wind of a really nice set of books, and next to that was a really nice set of art, and next to that was a really nice card game, and then there was a demo for a video game, and basically the whole package is this one whole set of tables right here, and it's all by the same person.
Michael D'Angelo from Tellist.
Tellist. And this started a while back. You've been writing for 17 years.
17 years, yeah. It's actually been more than half of my life at this point.
All right. All right, so Tellist, the elevator pitch for your books.
So Tellist is basically Marvel meets medieval. So if you like superheroes and you like medieval fantasy, we're your jam.
Okay. And you have a core set of books. You have a whole bunch of characters. It's your Avengers Assemble is the central series, and you have a whole bunch of other novellas or...
Yeah, so they're novella series that kind of follow like one or two characters, and then they kind of all converge into one trilogy that's kind of like you said, the Avengers, my Avengers.
Where did the idea come from?
So actually, way back, you know, when we're talking like 17 or 18 years ago, that there was a game, Baldur's Gate, that came out.
Baldur's Gate, yep. Yeah. It's coming out with 3 very soon.
Yes, I saw it from Larian Studios.
Yep.
So... When the second one came out, I found out that you could do like a profile for whatever your characters were. And after a math test one day, I crushed it early and had nothing but time on my hands. So I started writing like a 2-page profile for my character. And then after that, it expanded into like a 70-page novella. After that, it ended up being like a 350-page story that I had to kind of cut into 2. It just kind of went out of control. And then before you know it, 17 years later, you have 18 books. So
a real passion project then. Like this this caught fire in your imagination.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And you just added to it as you went along.
Yep.
And, you know. Nice. All right. So you had the books. Then you started, let's see if I got this correctly. You decided to start putting together a game.
Yes. Yeah. Me and a friend were talking for a while about what to do, like how you could kind of do a card game like we had seen. And actually, there was a game that came out called Boss Monster that kind of loosely inspired us to start thinking about our own games. And finally, something just kind of clicked, and we kind of put together an idea. I pitched it during a dinner meeting. Beforehand, he had no idea what I was actually going to bring to the table, and I actually kind of forced him to play it. He liked it. He actually said, let's put some money into it, and we started, you know, with my brother as the third investor, we really started to kind of take a whack at it and see where it went.
And how long did it take for you to, I mean, it sounds like it came out really good right out of the gate, but how long did it take to balance it?
So we tried to adhere to, there's a 100-100 rule. So you want to try and do at least 100 games, and you want to spend at least 100 hours on your game to make sure that it's balanced right, to make sure that, okay, you know, you've ironed out all the kinks and everything. And we did have them, of course. We introduced new mechanics that we weren't even sure that we were going to do, and they ended up really working out well. And each member of, you know, the team ended up bringing in some pretty cool ideas.
Well, after they read your books.
Yeah, basically.
Or did you force them to read your books?
So luckily, most people I don't have to force to read the books. Every now and then I have to kind of take someone by the ear and say, look, you're going to really like this. Just dive right in.
Well, I've noticed that, you know, several of the people walking by didn't quite make it. So now you go from a physical game, card game, like, say... was it Magic the Gathering? But yours is based more on getting dungeons together and picking out the heroes.
Exactly. So you're kind of trying to... Everyone's going into a dungeon together with multiple parties. And what you're trying to do is kind of take chambers in the dungeon, make them yours, and then make them work against the other people's parties.
Mm-hmm. And we had talked that it was kind of like that old Dungeon Keeper video game that so many people, anybody who's played it, they have very good memories of that game because... It's nice to be the bad guy for once and, you know, build dungeons, lure the heroes in, take them out.
Yeah,
you
know? Absolutely.
Now, you go from that, and the name of the system that you use to create the card game.
So the card game you can get from the Game Crafter.
Yeah.
So we use them to do, like, our concept piece, our pilot, our prototype. And then we ended up just using them where you can get the game straight from them now. So we get a nice little cut. And we don't have to do the work of actually physically printing anything. We don't have to go overseas and get anything done there. It's all right here, I think, in Washington State. So
nice. And you said that that's good for now. And then when you start to go into huge bulk,
Yeah, yeah. So if we do want to try and make a little bit more money, because we make, you know, a nice little dollar or two. You make your coffee money on a game like this.
Yeah.
But if you really want to make some money, you want to buy overseas, you want to try and do like a big volume bulk order, maybe like 2,500 copies at one time. Maybe sometime in the future we'll have enough money to do something like that. But for now, we're okay doing it the way that we are.
And then you graduated to video game.
Yeah, yeah. So at one point we decided, all right, we want to try something a little different and we want to make sure that we secure the trademark for the game. So we made Quantum Quest Merge Dungeon, which is kind of like an idle game where, again, you kind of become the bad guy. You're taking on the role of the dungeon master's kind of henchman, and you're building up stronger monsters for the Lord of the Dungeon.
Very nice.
Yep.
So when's the LARP, the movie, and the escape room come out?
So I can't say much about those. I'd love them to be here like next week. I do know that we're talking about either doing a graphic novel or a comic, and my brother is trying to push for a children's novel.
Oh, okay.
So maybe something with kind of – I had kind of like cutesy baby versions of the characters from the card game,
uh-huh.
And people seem to really like those, so we can kind of – lean into that and maybe throw in some baby characters into the child's book.
And you did all this while also having a full-time job.
Yes. Yeah. I've never been unemployed. Cross my fingers. That will always kind of be the case. And all my free time goes into either this, maybe getting a little bit of video time in, or maybe going to see a movie with my wife.
Remembering who your wife is.
Yeah.
Yeah. You put a lot of people to shame with this. This is quite an operation. So what's next after this? I mean,
We definitely want to see where the game goes. I'm still working on wrapping up kind of like the phase two of the book series, which is I have to finish the last novella in like the book two. Like we have trilogies that we're making, and I've finished the second book for every mini series except for the fall, mm-hmm. which is kind of like. That's my favorite one, which is why it's taking so long to wrap that up. That one chronologically is the oldest story that I'm telling. So it's a lot that I want to make sure I get the lore right and everything like that. Once we're done with that, we're kind of up to the point where I'm going to wrap up the trilogies. And that's when we're going to do the second kind of Avengers type, you know, collaboration where all the characters come together.
Nice. And how much, considering how you've written this, and I've known people that do this kind of thing where they have notes for decades.
Yeah.
And then, so I'm assuming that you have like plans for way out.
Or oh,
like,
yeah.
Is
yeah.
there like an ending that you're moving towards?
So I think because there's so many characters in my universe, it's so hard to actually like think that like there would be an ending. So certainly certain characters, their stories are going to wrap up. But I feel like in the universe that I'm building, which is kind of like a Game of Thrones, George R. R. Martin style mm-hmm. amount of characters. There's always kind of like side avenues that you can go down. And I've been surprised myself with, all right, well, I've got this new character that I can explore all these kinds of things with. So I don't think I'm ever going to really be completely tapped out as far as ideas.
Nice. And when you say universe, you don't mean fictional universe because you're branching all out into, you know, there's a map here. Oh, the art too. You've got the art.
Yep. Yep. We have art from, I think we're up to 16 artists. Across the world, we have artists from Italy who does our cover artist is from Italy. All my interface stuff and my logos, a guy from South Africa does. My biggest concept artist is from the UK. I mean, we work with people all over the place.
And you pay them and all that?
Oh yeah, yeah, they get paid. Nobody does anything for charity. So and they deserve to be paid. I mean, it's fantastic work. Nothing here is what I would consider subpar.
Okay, so you. You're self-published through Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the game system through the game.
So the card game is published through the Game Crafter. We're making the game with a system called Game Maker, and we're working with a programmer who's doing all that for us. We've talked to a composer who's going to do some music for us, and we actually are still using the same artist who's done the card game.
Okay.
He's doing the art for the video game as well.
So, and how did you find the artists? I mean,
so most of them I actually found through DeviantArt.
Oh, okay. We've heard that before. Yeah.
Yep. Every now and then, I've found them in like other means, like I found them on like subreddits or things like that. And there's another gentleman who's at this convention who told me that he's ran into some artists at Craigslist.
Oh,
and not like local artists. Like he's found like an artist from New Delhi who was on Craigslist. I don't know how it worked out, but and he's done wonderful work for him. So maybe when I need another artist, I'll be tapping into Craigslist.
Yeah, very cool. Do you have any suggestions or advice for people getting into, say, writing or any of these?
So, I think if you're writing, I think you've probably already got an idea that you want to tell. Mm-hmm. And I think that if you kind of let your idea just kind of hang out, you're kind of doing a disservice to yourself. Mm-hmm. I say, write what you know, write what you can. And then later on down the line, that's when you can polish it and you can clean it up and you can make it better. So I've been doing this for 17 years and you're never going to be satisfied with your writing. It's always going to get better. You're going to look back and say, that was my writing. So if you just wait forever, it's never going to get done.
Yeah, fair enough. All right. We'd like to finish these off with a question. How do you measure success?
So I find that I felt successful the first time someone who I didn't know told me that they were happy reading one of my books. That was all I needed.
Fair enough. And that makes you happy, too, because yeah. They pay for it.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, thank you very much for taking the time out of your day to do two interviews
That's
in a
okay.
row. And, good luck this weekend.
Thank you so much.
That was a
there you go.
That was a great interview, John. And you know what? Maybe the TELUS should be the next big thing coming to a theater near you.
Yeah, we've had quite a few people that – actually, a few that are – some of them we can't even talk about that are coming out with movies.
Well, yeah. There is – I think the movie's out, isn't it? Or they're wrapping it up.
I don't know if it's the one I'm thinking about because I know of two, I think.
I have no idea what you guys are talking about.
Okay. There's something we won't – I don't know if we're allowed to talk about it.
We're not allowed to say. Don't even talk about it, is it?
All right. We'll tell you once we get off air. All right, so that's probably a good place to put a pin in it this week. There might be listeners going right now, like, what are they talking about? We'll
there's co-hosts thinking that.
We did that on purpose.
Yes, exactly. Maybe we'll talk to the creators we know and see what we can reveal next week. So on that note, boys and girls, as always, thanks for listening, and don't let your cape caught in the door. Have a good week.